Hello, and welcome to another episode of my podcast, The Global Agora. My name is Andrej Matyshak, and I work as the Deputy Head of Foreign Desk in Slovak Daily Pravda, which, by the way, means truth, and it's not Russian Pravda. Will Ursula von der Leyen be President of the European Commission again? She has been confirmed as the European People's Party candidate to continue with her current job, and is pretty sure that the EPP will win the European Parliament elections in June. But, for me, it's not obvious that she will stay. Policy analyst from the European Policy Center, Harry Maurice, reacts. Why does she say this, and what's next for the EPP after the elections? Listen to our conversation. If you enjoy what I do, please support me on Ko-fi. For the link, see also a description of this episode. And now, up to the new debate. According to the polls, the EPP will be the strongest party in the new European Parliament after the elections in June. What are the main reasons, from your perspective, why it seems that the European People's Party will emerge victorious?
I think because it's one of the traditional big tent parties in Europe, which is in power in a lot of countries. It has 11 leaders sitting in the European Council, so it means a lot. It has the presidency of the Commission, the presidency of the Parliament. It had, until some years ago, the leadership in the main EU country, Germany. It now got back Poland. So with the European Socialists, it's one of the two historical parties in Europe. And despite destabilization of the political systems, which we saw in France, for instance, with Macron popping up, which we see in many countries like Netherlands also, or Italy, and the fact that we have more and more coalitions in the member states, that we have more and more populist or far-right party being the first, second, or third political force. The EPP is still strong nationally, and so it will be strong in the parliament because the European elections are just the addition of national elections. So the result will be a photography of the state of political parties in Europe, and EPP, even if it is less dominant and less powerful than it used to be, is still a strong party because it's one of the two traditional main parties in Europe.
Some people are arguing that the EPP is moving towards the more right-wing position, especially on climate change and migration. Especially with migration, we can probably see that everybody moves towards the more right-wing positions. But do you think that we see this development within the EPP? Or maybe this is just a little bit of shallow analysis?
I think you have in all parties, especially when there are big, different tendencies in it. I mean, even if you take a few years back, Berlusconi, Rajoy were not exactly on the same positions. Even, well, don't forget that Orban was in EPP for some time. Even if you look at France, when you had Sarkozy, Fillon, I mean, Fillon was not on the line of Merkel either in the few months when he was a leader of the French right. Concerning climate, I think the EPP became climate transition supportive 5 years ago because it was popular pressure which was reflected in the composition of the parliament. I mean, the Green Group was, or you know, proportionally quite big by its standards. Of course, the Social Democrats and also the centrists and liberals were also more open to this idea of green policies. So the EPP, especially because they had the presidency of the Commission and the Commission was having this green term, the EPP had to follow. So in a way, we could ask not whether the EPP is turning right, especially on these questions, or if it's just back to what was its traditional position, meaning be careful of business, be careful of farmers, okay for ecology, but it cannot be against economy. And in this way, I think what von der Leyen said in her speech, State of the Union speech in September, what we can see in the EPP platform
is basically this message, okay, for ecology, but we are pro-business, not meaning business first, but taking into account the interests or the demands of the business. The second remark is that as a political party, you also look at opinion polls, you look at elections results, and what we see is a demand for not less ecology, but at least less painful or less brutal or less fast transition, which can be discussed. I mean, we know that we have to do something, but if you look at the public opinion, the citizen, the voters, they want something else. We saw that in Netherlands with the Farmers' Party, and also maybe with votes for Wilders, even if it had other reasons. We saw that in France with the Gilets Jaunes a few years ago. We see that now with the Farmers' Protest in Germany also, which are not only against the CAP, but also against the all, not only climate, it's the green policies in terms of environment as well. So you have fairly big part of the electorate which wants less green policies, or at least that green policies are not driving all the other policies. And so as a political party, which, as I explained just before, was maybe playing not against, but not exactly his traditional lines. Of course, it listens to the voters and it has an interest to address these concerns because it wants to have to get elected. So that's the second reason. And the third reason, yeah, maybe there is also rightization in a way on many topics, on social issues, on migration, on, I mean, if you look at the right-wing parties in the US, in the UK, France, in Italy, in Greece, in a way, yeah, they are being maybe less liberal in the traditional sense of the term and more conservative. So you have the three elements, a turn which I think is not so much of a U-turn on IMA because it's more like a resetting on traditional line and also adaptation to the zeitgeist, I would say, with a part of society becoming more conservative because of many reasons, globalization, questions on collective identity, concerns of on personal future, on social issues. Yeah, that's how I would explain that.
So how do you assess the possible future cooperation of the EPP and the, let's say, the more Eurosceptic right-wing parties now represented by the European Conservative and Reformist group?
I think in your question you have the answer, meaning that there will be cooperation, but on issues which are not touching on what the EU is. So you can work with Eurosceptics as long as it's not on Eurosceptic issues or, you know, issues on which you can be Eurosceptic. So everything on EU reform, rule of law, maybe, well, let's see. But I think in terms of climate, in terms of even migration, I mean, what is being Eurosceptic in migration? When you see what Meloni is doing, what Eurosceptic can be, I don't want EU action, but it can also be, I want EU action. Well, I don't know if she followed that, but the former director of Frontex is running for the Rassemblement National. So what does it mean? Does it mean that they have realized that, okay, the EU is the right level of action? Because what Ledger is saying now, when I was at Frontex, I didn't have the means to do my job. Well, first, his new party did vote against everything to increase the budget and the powers of Frontex. But secondly, that means that they have someone saying on their behalf that, yeah, we need something at EU level, which is new. So on migration, I think there can be cooperation because it won't be affecting the principle of EU action. On economic and social issues, it's the same. But yes, on things which would weaken the EU project and goes against the interest of the EU in itself, yeah, the cooperation would be more difficult. But I think there would be no cooperation. It's not like, if I say cooperation would be difficult, it suggests there would be an effort for cooperation, but I don't think so. Unless they want to get ECR on the EPP line, but I don't think there will be some, well, compromise will be necessary, of course, but I don't think EPP will go towards ECR on these issues.
But in theory, and of course this is an absolutely hypothetical question, but in theory, if EPP and ECR would be able to create the majority in the next European Parliament, what would it mean for the EU?
Well, that would mean they agree on fundamentals like repartition of competences between the EU and member states, which I don't think happen. It would mean also that ECR is coherent. If we talk about only ECR, I put ID in another box. But I mean, even ECR between PIS and Fratelli d'Italia or ODS, I don't think they have a clear view on what they would like for the EU. And so it would be even more difficult with DPP. But if we take the hypothesis, of course, that would mean they have some kind of balance between, well, going from Christian Democrats in the Nordic countries, for instance, to PIS. Well, I would be curious to see what would be the compromise line on that. And it would mean also probably less social policies, less efforts for the climate and green transition.
So if you look at the polls, what do you think that might be the most probable, let's say, the coalitions that will run the EU after the European Parliament election?
The fact is, I'm not sure we can talk about coalition.
Yeah, I'm using this word in a very, very loose meaning.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it's important to add that. Coalition would mean there is a kind of agreement at the start of the legislature to agree on things. There is a paper on which we agree on this and this and this. And even, I think, in that term, the ending term, there was no proper coalition. They had a kind of agreement, informal agreement, but no coalition. And if we look at the likely outcome, of course, there could be a coalition of EPP, SNT, Renew. They would still have majority, but it's not sure. I think they would. But I don't think the EPP would want to tie its hands for the legislature. And I think it will be more coalition building on different issues. And even for the SND, I mean, if you do an agreement with the Renew EPP, what do you do with the grids? And they are still important for the SND. And I don't see a coalition going from the Greens to the EPP. So I don't think there will be a proper coalition, but there will be maybe something informal on, you know, the larger principles of pro-EU platform, or at least pledge. But in the concrete work, EPP would, but what it's been doing already and what Renew is doing also, it's depending on the topics, you find your allies on the left or on the right. And that's how a parliament works also. The problem being this time that maybe it will be more difficult to balance between the need for specific coalition with the right and specific coalition with the left. I mean, the balance is maybe more difficult to find, and it probably would give less coherence to what is being adopted and to EU policies. And we need coherence in EU policies now more increasingly. Because climate cannot be disconnected from social issues, which cannot be disconnected from economic governance, which can be totally disconnected from, of course, budget policies, meaning investment policies, meaning industrial policies. So you see, everything is related. And if you have ad hoc coalitions, it may create less coherence in EU action, which is already the case in the Council. The Parliament is usually more coherent than the Council. And I think Parliament will be less coherent. So we would have two less coherent institutions for decision-making, for legislative decisions.
What about the EU top jobs? Do you think that one of those might not to go to EPP, SND or Renew?
I will publish, well, I sent it yesterday, but it should be published next week in a Swiss newspaper, where I argue that von der Leyen won't be the next European Commission president. Well, I don't say she won't. I say here is a scenario by which she would not be. My scenario being that there will be no clear majority for the election of the president of the parliament, and that the European Council cannot take the risk of putting a candidate who's not sure to get a majority. And the second reason is that after a vote which mediatically will be considered as a protest vote, it's difficult to say, okay, we hear what you voters, you citizens say, but and we keep the same to continue. The big weakness of my scenario, I acknowledge that, is that that would mean probably the EPP would lose the commission, which it's difficult for it to accept. But if EPP loses the commission, they would want to keep probably the European Council, especially as they are the main force in the European Council. And then it would be the socialists not wanting it. So I don't know. Maybe the victim of that would be Renew, especially if Renew loses, well, they will lose seats and they will be close, very close to far right. So maybe they would not get, especially if Rutte has NATO, it's a Renew position. But my bet, because I like to bet on unlikely things, is that von der Leyen won't say it.
It's interesting because this is something I wanted to just ask you about. So you are reading my mind. And do you think that this is almost certain that von der Leyen will be the next the president of the next thing?
Well,
and it seems that you are not that certain, as many other people are.
So I'm saying it cautiously. So I'm saying that it will be difficult for von der Leyen to get a majority to get elected. And if it's difficult to get a majority, of course, it's very difficult to get the appointment by European Council. The result, if there is a strong result by conservative and far right, will open a new political situation. It's difficult to keep the same person if you want to show that things have to change, and especially if there is no clear majority. For me, it's not obvious that she will stay.
French far-right politicians throughout the Assemblée Nationale, Jordan Bardella, is using the term von der Leyenism.
Yeah,
he's using it in a derogatory manner as an offense. But do you think that something like von der Leyenism exists? And if it exists, how would you define it?
No, I don't think so. And you know, the use of this term is that means that there is a personification of the EU in Ursula von der Leyen, which for me is also why it would be difficult for leaders to keep her, because she's the face of the EU and she tried everything she could to be the face of the EU. But now the downside of it is that, okay, if there is a protest vote, well, she's the face of the EU. And so she's the main responsible for what. In reality, I don't think it is. I mean, of course, the Commission took a lot of initiatives, but...
And maybe, I'm sorry to interrupt you, maybe the Commission was also that visible and she was also that visible because of the Russian war against Ukraine.
I think she was visible already with COVID when she started to do her videos on, you know, on social medias and so on. And if you look back to, you know, the controversies on vaccines and so on, the controversies in both directions, the one saying vaccines are not coming fast enough, it was because of the EU. And then the anti-vaccines were also looking at her because she was the one managing the whole thing. But of course, with Ukraine, she took also leadership on sanctions. She was the first to mention enlargement to Ukraine. She took a few initiatives, but I don't think there is a von der Leyenism, apart from giving more power to the Commission and being friendly with the US. But that's a French expert speaking. But no, I mean, of course, she put Green Deal on top as, you know, a flagship project for her mandate because she needed that to get elected by the parliament. And also she felt that at the time, she felt that it was a good topic. As I said, there was public pressure and so on. But in the end, she's never presented, even the State of the Union is not a personal view. So I don't think von der Leyenism, it's more, her record is also the record of the European Council, which is the institution to give political momentum. And if we compare to Delors, I think with the last one where we could say Delorsism because he proposed, initiated a lot of things, but what she has done has not as large, as not as encompassing and era-changing as what Delors did. She did a lot to react to events. She did a lot to adapt the EU, of course, but she's not alone in that. And it's not, there's no, I don't think there's a vision, but maybe I'm too critical, but I don't think there is one, a positive acceptance or a concrete positive acceptance of the term on their Leyenism, which is not easy to say anyway. I think in domestic politics, it's also to, you know, it's a dog whistle for the German Europe. And I guess the, you know, the following step or the subtext is Macron is submitting to a German.
This was another episode of my podcast, The Global Agora. Subscribe, listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and on the other platforms. If you enjoy what I do, please support me on Ko-fi. For the link, see also the description of this episode. Thank you for listening and stay tuned.